What are you reaching for? If you're a smoker or vapor, you're definitely reaching for nicotine satisfaction. But you could be reaching for so much more with Zyn nicotine pouches. When you reach for Zyn, you're not just reaching for nicotine enjoyment. You're reaching for the freedom to explore 10 flavored and unflavored varieties, each available in 3 milligram and 6 milligram strengths. When you reach for Zyn, you're reaching for the ability to live life on your terms. Instead of stepping away from good times, you can lean in. And because Zyn is smoke-free, you don't have to think about lingering smells or worry about clunky devices. When you reach for Zyn, you're reaching for opportunities to break free from your routine and membership in a unique nationwide community. Whatever you're reaching for, reach for it with America's number one nicotine pouch brand. Find your Zyn wherever nicotine products are sold near you. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify has got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Yes, I'm going to say that I appreciate not just that they are trying to open up the tent and the coalition at an event that is very geared toward red meat.
Hello, everyone. This is JVL here with my best friends. Again, for the first time in months, Sarah Longwell and Tim Miller of The Bulwark. Before we get started, these two, and then other awesome people like Adam Kinzinger are coming to Dallas for a live show on September 5th. That's like next week. It's unbelievable. There are literally like a dozen tickets left. I think there are 15 or 20 tickets left, even though it's a giant theater. If you are in the Dallas Metroplex, go and get them right now. Go to thebulwark.com/events. Get your tickets. It's going to be a fantastic show. I am going to be very excited. Somebody will probably put me on FaceTime so I can just, watch it all live from the audience with you, the people. Thebulwark.com/events. Dallas, next Thursday, September 5. Go get that done. All right, friends. Best friends.
It hasn't been months since we've been together.
It feels like it. I mean, I've just been grinding over here. Well, you guys have been on vacation. To JBL's tanned. He's been at the beach. Sarah's been in Alaska, so you're not tanned. But, you're there. I'm sure you hiked or did lumberjacking or whatever lesbians do in Alaska. But it's fine. No big deal. Nothing's been happening.
So let's just start with the state of play. Where are we now versus where we were the last time the three of us were together? Tim, would you like to go first and set the table?
Sure. Though I'm interested to hear a little, some focus group chatter. In a weird way, I don't know that the state of play of the actual campaign is that different from when we were that together 2-3 weeks ago. Like, a lot's happened. We had the conventions since we were last together, so we should all talk about that. Kamala pandered to us, which I loved. Please, mm-hmm. I love being pandered to. Being pandered to is amazing.
No, I've heard from conservatives that it's bad that she's pandered. She's such a radical lefty that now that she sounds like John McCain, that makes it worse somehow. Because you can't
trust disingenuous. You can't trust her. Yeah. Just a little compassionate conservatism at the DNC. Nothing wrong with that. A little compassionate patriotism. So that was good. I guess because this is the next level, and we gotta express our rain cloudy views. Which, well, I'm hoping Sarah has a better view. I'm a little bit nervous about the numbers. I feel like there's a little bit of a disconnect between the vibes and the data. And the vibes are great. And I think JVL wrote a newsletter that was like Donald Trump is going to lose probably, which I got to take a triple check on it just to make sure it wasn't a guest author. And so I'm happy when JVL's happy. I'm happy everybody's happy. I think the vibes are going to continue to be high, and I think that the Kamala convention and Walz pick and everything that I had, even things that I criticized or had mixed views on, like Walz, everything has worked out to solve the biggest problem the Democrats had, which is that the core people in the coalition are now excited. They're going to vote. Even some new people are going to vote. We've seen some good registration numbers among young voters, among Black women in particular, among Black voters over the past month. Tom Bonier had a good analysis of that. So I think that the base problem is solved. The enthusiasm gap chasm is resolved. Kamala's positioning is good. But that takes us back to basically 2020, which we won by the skin of our fucking teeth. So that's essentially how I'd sum up my assessment of where we're at right now.
Sarah?
Ooh, I got a lot.
Hit me.
So let's start with the fact
fact check. July 31st was the last time the three of us were together. So it has been a month. So you should have a lot and you should just go. I want like 15 minutes of Sarah Longwell filibuster.
I've missed you. This is why I've been having to do those CBD gummies that people sent us. Like, you know, I need this therapy session once a week.
Me too. I've missed you guys. Let me just drop a few things. Number one, I went from Alaska almost directly to the DNC, which I was not intending on doing. But David Axelrod wanted me to do this thing through the Institute of Politics with Cook Political Report. And so me and John Anzalone, who was Biden's pollster, who's also the guest on this week's focus group podcast, did kind of a thing with the
and
media.
A Bulwark reader, apparently. I saw him tweeting a Bulwark article this week.
Yeah, you know, you'd be surprised. We got a lot of people out there who like our stuff. And so being at the DNC was a real trip. Last convention I'd been to was Tampa, Mitt Romney's convention. And this was different than that.
We built that. We built that. Man, good times.
Good times.
And, you know, I haven't talked to you guys about this. I did a little bit of post game on Kara Swish's podcast, but where one of the things that I talked about, and I think it's worth just mentioning here, Tim said, you know, there's a lot in there for us in terms of what Kamala said, but I just want to talk about how that whole convention was for us. Like, the whole convention featured, they didn't just give Adam Kinzinger some 4 o'clock slot on a Wednesday. Dude was like two people in front of Kamala in prime time on the last night, giving a barn burner about the moral imperatives around stopping Donald Trump. And he was excellent.
Even the guy after him was kind of for us, Roy Cooper.
Roy Cooper. But they also had a lot of people who, with Kyle Sweetster, who was an RVAC guy. They had, you know, some of our people were actually
love
on
you,
stage. You know, Olivia was there. There was, you know, there was a whole, like, sort of Republicans for Harris contingent.
Jeff Duncan, yeah.
Jeff Duncan. So there was a lot of us in the program. It wasn't just like, okay, we're going to have, what's his name? John Kasich, right? Standing in the middle of a cornfield at a crossroads with like a drone shot, right? It wasn't any of that great. It was like a bunch of our people. Now, to be fair, that was a COVID, you know, virtual convention, which sucks in general.
I can't even think about it. I know. We're not going back.
And so for me, and then on top of it, the chance of USA, them holding up I'm on the floor of the convention and everybody's got USA signs. When Walt spoke, they called him Coach Walz. Like, I had never been on the floor, so I'd never seen the way that people like run around really fast with signs to like create the new vibe. Yeah. But like the messaging from this convention, except for the low point was Bill Clinton. Because why isn't he canceled? And like, why is he talking for a million years?
I
didn't have a seat, so I was standing and I was like, oh my God, somebody get the cane and get him out of here. Somebody told me something really funny. Somebody texted me to be like, my kid just asked me if Bill Clinton is Hillary Clinton's dad.
Dagger.
Yeah, brutal. But for the most part, right, her speech And the people that they had there, the chance of USA, the way that they sort of went out of their way to not let Republicans own patriotism. I felt very comfortable rhetorically a lot of the time at this convention. And you know, I'll get to, as we go, the disagreements I've had with the Dispatch and some of the others. But one of the things, and Tim said this too, is that, yes, I'm going to say that I appreciate not just that they are trying to open up the tent and the coalition at an event that is very geared toward red meat. They are opening up the coalition. But also, like, in her speech, going on offense on immigration, right?
Gonna sign the Lankford bill.
Signing the Lankford bill. And so they
lethal.
Are... Lethal. We want to have the most lethal.
My favorite thing about the lethal thing was I didn't even notice it. I was just like, you know, it was during the nodding section for me. Yeah. And then I'm at MSNBC headquarters and you're in Chicago. And I was watching it alone in a private little room. Then I went out to like chat with people and they're all like, wow, she was really going there with lethal. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like three separate people said that to me. And I had to go back and look at the transcript. I was like, oh, yeah, I guess she mentioned lethal. I was like, so, you know, that was.
What are we supposed to do? Throw books at our enemies,
shaking
guys?
Shaking the cages of the Democrats in there. I liked that.
Yeah, what other kind of fighting force are we supposed to have? And so, anyway, I guess I just, I felt like for the first time, Democrats were really getting it. And Joe Biden did some of this. Like, Joe Biden in his virtual convention, there was like faith, flag, freedom. But like, freedom was like a whole theme that night, and they're just pounding it. And I really felt like they understood the assignment in a big way. And I appreciated that. So why is that? What's wrong with that? Anyway, but I also want to talk about Tim's concern about the polls. Now, here's the thing. And I said this to the media that was there. And I think we understood this in a way that maybe only a few other groups who are really doing deep polling understood on the Dem side. And it's the reason that ultimately Biden chose to step down, is some of those people who had really deep information were going to him being like, you, sir, are going to get crushed.
Yeah.
And he was going to get crushed. The problem for him was not really kind of even the RVAT voters. Like, old white people were okay with him. In fact, those are the people that now we got to go reshore up, because they're a little bit of a problem now. But they were like hanging in with Biden. The problem was his entire rest of his coalition was bored and angry and disinterested, and they weren't mad enough at Donald Trump to get driven berserk like they have in the past. They were just actively pissed at Biden, and he was going to get killed. And the fact that those, and so this is the thing about polling. Polling struggles, it's the reason I like focus groups. Polling struggles to gauge enthusiasm. And it struggles to gauge. I mean, they try, right? Yeah. They do. And now, and the
you
RC
have the
movement.
Self-assessment. How likely are you to vote and stuff?
Vote,
but like,
that's
there's
right.
Just the flaws of self-reported anything, you know?
Right. And that's why whenever nobody knows the answers, they're all like, well, it's all going to come out to turnout.
Yeah.
And it's because that is, A, both true, but also, like, it's the big unknowable with everything. But I think what we can now compare is that turnout was going to be an extraordinarily difficult thing for Joe Biden to manage with the level of enthusiasm he had from his base. Now they've got the enthusiasm on their side. Their base is going to turn out. They're in an enormously much better position. An enormously much better position. Sorry, that's terrible phraseology. They're in a much better position now than they were before. And I think the fact that it doesn't show up in polling has more to do with polling and what it can capture. Right. Like, I think it's capturing the movements across some demographics. I don't know that it's being able to capture how big a difference in turnout you might see as a result of enthusiasm. And the base sort of showing up, which meant that they got the base and they understood the assignment to go find the persuadables, right? And to give them something. Now, she has moved the polling in her favor, and I still don't think we're seeing, you know, the convention.
No, we don't really
bump.
Have great post-convention polls yet. That's going to come this week, end of this week. Yeah.
But also just like everybody should just kind of, you know, get ready, because this is going to be tight as a tick no matter what. Right?
I know JBL says that Kamala has this in the bag.
That's not what I said.
Just fucking with you.
Yeah. So here's Harris has returned us to the world of 2016 and 2020, which is what was required. Mm-hmm. And I think it is now basically in the bag that she's going to win the popular vote. I don't think it's possible for her to lose the popular vote. I think it was very possible that Biden was going to lose the popular vote. And so when I say that Trump is going to lose, probably, what I mean is he's in the position of trying to have to cobble out an electoral college majority while in the course of losing by about 3 percentage points nationally. And that's doable. It's not impossible, but it is like drawing to probably an outside straight, right? So which gives you double the amount of outs as an inside straight does. It's what is it, like a 1 in 12 or 1 in 8 proposition. And that's hard to do. And if you hit it,
I think you might be drawn to an outside straight and be on a flush draw. And maybe, might be a little better than
maybe on a flush draw too. Yeah. But it's not impossible. But it if it happens, luck becomes an element of it, right? It's you need extra help. You can't just do it on your own. And I am slightly concerned about the post convention numbers. In order to feel good, I would probably want to see her in the neighborhood of 52% post convention average. And because that's where she's going to need to be, at 51% nationally, in order to have like anything more than a 60% chance of winning the Electoral College.
Can I poke at this one just real quick? Because this is a favorite of yours that I've decided I don't like. And the reason is this.
Oh, another one?
Sorry. We can get to some of the others. In this one, I just don't think that part of the reason that we start talking about the national number and the national percentage as like an indicator of where you need to be is because, like, well, you're going to get so many more votes in California and all these other places, and that's going to drive up the popular vote. And so you need it. Like, actually, the only thing that matters is, like, where is she in Pennsylvania? Like, I just want really good state level polling, because I don't think that national number matters that much. Like, I only need a number in Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, and probably Arizona and Nebraska.
I understand that. If I could just say, the reason I use the national number is because there are so many high quality polls nationally that you could use the national number as a stand in for the combined version of Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, et cetera.
And I'm not sure we can.
And so, well, I mean, it's an abstract, right? This is a way, like, this far out, we don't have tons and tons of great numbers from all of those individual states. And so I think it is useful to look at the national number as a sense of, okay, well, if nationally she's at 51.5, then that means that she's probably like up a point and a half in Pennsylvania, which puts her within the margin of error, and she's et cetera, et cetera.
So. The Pennsylvania thing is worth talking about. It's not really, you know, we could have a separate podcast with Nate Silver and Nate Cohn, where everybody breaks down how much you can abstract from the national number to the tipping point state. Yeah. I don't know that that's really the strength of this podcast. Nate has Harris up 2 right now in Pennsylvania in his average, Nate Silver. Like, the Pennsylvania thing worries me, though, because when you go back to the one negative in your whole positive spiel there, Sarah, it was the older whites.
Yes.
And if you look at Trump's numbers, Trump's ad numbers, Trump's doing so much stupid shit. We've been making fun of him for, like, the lack of ground game, making fun of him for the stupid NFT thing. Like, he has no message. Like, he's doing so much stupid shit. But their ad team knows what they're doing. Like, they have disproportionate amount of their ads are in Georgia and Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And, like, that's it, right? And I guess now North Carolina coming back into the mix, you could conceivably imagine a world where he wins Georgia and Pennsylvania, but then loses North Carolina, Arizona, and that gets the math back. But that's an outside chance. Like, really, all he needs to do is win Georgia and Pennsylvania. And Georgia's her weakest swing state. I forget... I'm sorry for not crediting this person, but a friend texted me. It was like they're watching the Phillies game in Pennsylvania yesterday, and it's like 90% Trump ads, right? Like, they know their assignment too, and so, like, that is the thing that does worry me, that like the weakest demo is a problem in both of those states, really. And obviously black voters are very important in Georgia, but there's a ton of old whites in Georgia. It's a big state outside of Atlanta. You can go to Rome and, you know, there's a lot happening outside of Atlanta in that state.
You need very high black turnout, right? Yeah. You need Obama 2008 level black turnout.
Yeah.
And then you need Biden 2020 levels in the suburbs.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's what she needs in Georgia.
But here, let me just say something else, though. She is not just overperforming now. Like, it's not just black women and Hispanics that have bounced back that are causing her lift in the polls over where Biden was. She's also doing better with white people.
Yeah.
I think there's a difference. There's old white people in these, but she's crushing with white women. And I think that we are going to have it's going to be obviously the largest gender gap we've ever seen, very likely, this election. And it's going to be the first problem. I think you will start hearing people talk about like the boys versus girls election, like nature of this election pretty soon, because the stratification is going to start to get out of control. But the fact is, Kamala Harris is weirdly doing well with non-college white women. Not weirdly. I mean, some of it's the abortion issue. I think that
that's a huge demo right now. The people,
and there's room
about.
To grow. Yeah. There's room to grow. And I'll tell you, if you want a little focus group chatter, let me tell you the most optimistic thing I've seen. Anzalone and I are going to talk about this group, and my team doesn't like it when I give out too much from the focus group.
Whatever, team.
On this pod.
We haven't been together in a month. All right, let us have some of the goodies.
So one of our we kind of have two kinds of persuadables that we really talk to. There's the Trump to Biden voters, so people who voted for Trump in 16 that went to Biden in 20, which is the part of the coalition you really have to hold in place. With Biden, we saw a lot of backsliding. With Kamala thus far, we have continued to see like a lot of openness to her. There's a lot more of like, let me hear her pitch, I want to know more. But it's been positive, but not exclusively positive. She has some of the baggage still with those voters that
Trump
that
to Biden,
Biden
you said? Sorry.
These yeah, Trump to Biden. Biden. Yeah. The other group that we talk to in our persuadable category are people who voted for Trump previously, but who rate him as doing a very bad job or say that they are unlikely to vote for him again. And we did this one. It was a lot of two-time Trump voters. And this is one of the groups we'll talk about. And they were like loving what Kamala's bringing. And like, so these are people who voted for Trump and they were like, I like her. I had a negative impression of her. They sort of say the thing that I talk about a lot, which is that these voters did have a negative impression. They didn't see her, didn't know what she did. They're getting reintroduced to her. And you know what they like the most? The positivity. It's just like, you know, you want to talk about vibes. They're like, one guy was like, this guy, like I watched the RNC convention. It made me want to go jump off a bridge. He was like one of the border bridges. And he's like, it's just nice to hear people talk nicely about the country. And
these
to
people
feel
voted
good.
For Trump twice.
Yeah.
All he's ever done is talk about what a hellhole America is. And they voted for him twice, but now they're responding to positivity.
Let's talk about low info voters, right? Okay. So there is and one of the guys in the group was so interesting because he was like, you know what, guys, I don't care about politics. I don't like it. I get bored watching cable news. I don't care. But like I vote. And this, he was like a real good old boy, this guy. And he was like, and I like Kamala. She seems good. Like, and so there is a whole group of voters. When people talk about low info voters, part of what they mean are people, it's not that they don't have any information. It's that they like aren't that into politics. They don't care. They don't treat it as blood sport. And so they're going off of who's saying some stuff I like, who seems like not a jerk, like whatever. And these guys, anyway, clean sweep.
Are they talking
Kamala
about her as a
Trump
celebrity?
Voter.
Do you think they're responding to the celebrity aspect?
No,
to
but
her?
They think she seems nice.
Positivity.
They think she seems competent.
Person focus group of my mother called me this week, and she was like, I'm excited. She's not a Trump voter, right? But like going from like being a Republican to being like, you know, one of us, to being like whatever to being like excited, right? Like, so like, that's like one category more away from the people you're talking to. But like, yeah, I do think that there like there is just that dynamic is working for her for people that are not, you know, broken brained by the tribal political wars.
And so let me give you, just for Tim's sort of gloominess, when you get enthusiasm out of people, right? Your mom's going to talk to a lot of other people,
yeah,
right? And they're going to talk about the election. And your mom's going to be like, ooh, I like her. I am excited to vote for her. And somebody else who had previously been like, I don't know her, I don't see her, I don't know what she does, I have a negative impression of her, is going to be like, ooh, this person likes her, has affirmative feelings for her. And that is how you create a new environment. The fact that Kamala has changed the environment this much, has done this well on her reintroduction, I think is genuinely astounding. And yeah, I think the ripple possibly effects have predicted of that.
It. I'm not really nobody, and certainly nobody on this
There's
podcast.
There's upside there. I could have sworn.
I'm with you. I'm not gloomy. I'm just, I think that there's a misalignment between the data and the vibes, and I think the vibes should keep going, but I do not want the Kamala team, the PAC environment, the big donors, like the people to be like the pedal has to be on the metal. And I just and again, I this is not even really a criticism of Kamala's team, because you had to pull this all together in 5 weeks. And like all this shit's very hard and there are a million cooks and like you got to turn everything around. But it's just convention ended 6 days ago now. And like the ads that they have out there, like you're just okay. Like she's like, I want to see more nut cutting. Like I want to see continued, you know, driving this person into the ground, and I just worried that there's a little bit of, like there was this big relief, this big group relief, like oh okay, and so it's not as if they're not trying, they're not strategizing. It's just I'm guarding against that. Like there is. I think that's a little bit out of touch with the state of play, which is like her numbers right now are actually worse than Biden and Hillary's were at the same time, marginally.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, if the polling, if the data doesn't catch up to the vibes over the next week and a half, then we should start to get a little concerned. Right. But by that point, we'll be at the debate.
Guys, I'm still concerned.
I understand. I mean, really concerned. Yeah. Yeah,
we're not trying to misrepresent. All of us are consciously optimistic and concerned, just at various gradients.
But we'll be at the debate by then, and that will be another possible inflection point for just the environment of the race. And
can I say one other thing before the debate? So they've decided now that they're going to do a media interview. I saw a couple of people make this point on Twitter, and I just want to stomp on it because I agree with it so hard. I think doing one interview where you make the stakes very high for that one interview makes no sense. Like, just go do a bunch of media. And I'm not even saying go do a bunch of media because I think that I'm indignant about like they're doing. If they thought
the
that
fifth
their strategy
estate has a responsibility in our democracy, no, it's not that.
I mean, like Donald Trump does nothing but like phone call into, but you know, like whatever. I think that they should do 100 little interviews because I think it can help them. And I think that Kamala, and maybe like, I think you do this strategy when you're worried about your candidate's ability to communicate. And I would say I am genuinely, I've always said, like, I think there's upside there, whatever, but I've always been nervous about her ability to communicate. And now I'm like, she is communicating extremely well. Her messaging is correct. Her delivery is excellent. She's been good, like, off the cuff with report, like, in the gaggles and, like, whatever. Like, she's sharp. Let her go. Let's see her.
I know. I don't get it either. I would sit her in a little room for an hour, call, you know, do remotes into local TV stations and do, like, 10 different ones for 8 minutes apiece, and then just be like, oh, we're done with this, guys. Stop. Like, okay, we did 10 interviews. We talked to Joey Johnson at NBC in Milwaukee, and we talked to, you know, the black radio person in Atlanta. And I really don't get it. And I'm with you. Totally as a strategy thing, not as an indignant thing, or not that I even give a fuck whether or not she does it. This show is sponsored by Lumen, the world's first handheld metabolic coach. Lumen is a device that measures your metabolism through your breath, and on the app it lets you know if you're burning fat or carbs and gives you tailored guidance to improve your nutrition, workouts, sleep, and even stress management. Here's how it works. All you have to do is breathe into your Lumen first thing in the morning. You'll know what's going on with your metabolism, whether you're burning mostly fats or carbs. Then Lumen gives you a personalized nutrition plan for that day based on your measurements. You can also breathe into it before and after workouts and meals, so you'll know exactly what's going on in your body in real time. And Lumen will give you tips to keep you on top of your health game game, in case you're not aware, because I wasn't when I was first sent the device. Metabolism is your body's engine. It's at the center of everything your body does. Optimal metabolic health translate to a bunch of benefits, including easier weight management, improved energy levels, better fitness results, better sleep. I have to say, Tyler's more the fitness man in our house. I'm yoging, you know me, and I'm yoging, but I am interested in the metabolic health because, you know, you want to stay skinny. JVL, you know a little something about that. You seem like your metabolic health is doing a little better these days.
It's going amazing. I'm not going to lie. Everything's great for me right now.
Wow. Look at that. You know, we can keep our energy levels up pretty easily with the info your Lumen provides. It's not just about metabolism. It's not just about that. It's like, why am I so tired right now? Oh, wait, is it because I was on MSNBC at 2 a.m. and at 6 a.m. and all I ate was Ruffles? Yeah, maybe that's it. So if you want to take the next step in improving your health, go to lumen.me/thenextlevel to get 15% off your Lumen. That is lumen.me/thenextlevel for 15% off your purchase. Thank you, Lumen, for sponsoring this episode.
So another thing that happened is that RFK Jr. pulled out of the race. I would say this, I was slightly happy about this because I had there's a friend of the show who will be listening to this, who I'm going to keep blinded because this is an ongoing conversation he and I had, where he said he thought that the RFK campaign was really potentially dangerous for Biden because it was so coded to left-wing progressivism. He said, you know, you watch an RFK event and, you know, if you're a low information voter, you just think RFK, you think vaccines. But they're doing, like, you know, Native American drumming and lots of talk about the environment. He's like, it's very coded for, like, progressive hippie left. And I said to my buddy, I was like, dude, no, the only thing this is about is vaccines. And all of his appeal is to Trump voters. And now we see that is in fact the case. So he's out. He's on Team Trump. He and Tulsi Gabbard, who is another really person of outstanding judgment and intelligence, are roped in on the Trump transition team. I'm Ron Burgundy.
Yeah, well, it's conservatism.
It's conservatism.
It's important. It's important. If you care about conservatism, you want to make sure that, you know, Trump's in there because it's all about the policies. It's all about personnel. It's not really about the mean tweets, you know? So you want to have people in there that are going to put in good, solid conservatives like RFK Jr., who's going to ensure that the staffing is people that mostly... Did you see RFK's three main issues for why he's for Trump? I love this.
No, tell me.
Number one, censorship.
So big.
The Biden censorship regime. He's being so censored that he's on every media outlet he wants to be, and he has huge followings across social media, but he feels censored. And Donald Trump the next day said that you should be jailed if you burn the flag. But that's not really censorship.
That's a different
kind of
censorship. Censorship is really all about vaccine censorship.
Yes.
It's not about political censorship.
Censorship isn't even really about censorship. It's about people censoring you in the public. Like, you can't be criticized. It's about being criticized too harshly by the elites. So anyway, censorship, vaccines, he called it children's health.
Yeah,
vaccines.
Very important.
And number three, ending the Ukraine war. So conceding to Putin. So that was it. So you want the person that's heading up the transition to be like laser focused on bringing people in that are going to make sure that children do not get vaccinated and that Putin is given whatever parts of Eastern Ukraine he wants. And that's like a critical, those are critical conservative values, the Trump policies.
Where is Nicole in all of this and her bank account, more importantly?
Nicole Shanahan?
Yeah. Did she come?
Was she one of the players to be named later in this deal?
I saw
this fucking interview with her yesterday or 2 days ago where she's talking about how if Kamala gets in, then we're going to go through the Great Famine, similar to the 1960s in China.
Yeah.
And these people are batshit. And they're just totally off their rocker. It's an insane group. Do you not worry though, just a little bit, that like had he just been an egomaniac and stayed in, that it might ended up helping us a little bit?
I do think it was going to end up helping us a little bit, and here's why. I actually think that a lot of the sort of RFK curious Dems, I think that when Kamala came in, she wiped those people out. Like, they immediately got on side. So I just think what was left of the RFK curious types tended to be kind of Trumpy people, but who didn't like vaccines.
Right.
I think that was most of who was left. Or maybe they've got some of that weird, wellness is like their big thing, and, you know, supplements and weightlifting and ball tanning.
Anti-vaccine, pro-steroids.
Yeah. Yeah, well, so I told you, I'm sure I've told you guys about the group of
don't
of
get
women.
MMR boosters as a child, but do as much D-ball as you want.
Yeah, I did to that group of women from Arizona who were Trump folks. What are you laughing at?
Me keep being going. Funny.
There was a group of
He's
women from Arizona
jokes,
that we did a
Sarah.
Focus group with, and they were out on Trump over abortion. And they were all RFK curious because they saw the through line of bodily autonomy, right? Mm. That RFK was pro-choice and also pro not having to put a vaccine in your body. So, like, there was a way in which he sort of made sense to a certain group of people. But those people tended to be Trump voters. So I do think there was a world in which he was pulling some group of people away from Trump, okay? On the other hand, I don't think him getting out of the race is going to be a massive shift, in part because I think already RFK had sort of dropped down to a much smaller percentage of the race. And also a lot of these RFK curious types who are MAGA, they're also like not reliable voters and they're kind of weirdos. And I think, you know, Dems getting their people back. I think it's not a huge deal.
Yeah.
I think it's not a huge deal.
And the other thing that you have to consider is what if like you're an RFK voter that's maybe gettable for Trump and I don't know, you're driving around and then you see a beached whale on election day.
Yeah.
And you decide that what you need to do is decapitate it.
And then like put it on your car.
and on
drive
top
around
of your
with
car.
It.
A decapitated whale head, and then bring it home and show young children the decapitated dead whale head. Like that's like, you know, you can get easily waylaid if you're kinda into that sort of thing.
Yeah, I look at this and part of me thinks what should be a wash on this is the insanity of Trump's coalition.
Yes.
Because you have...
That drives people away. That's right.
Well,
sorry,
no,
I wanted
internally,
to make that point.
Internally, though, right? So you have RFK, who's like, I'm with Trump because bodily autonomy and I'm pro-choice. And then you also have all the evangelicals who are like, it doesn't matter what Trump is saying as he's throwing us under the bus. We just got to trust that he's going to be with us on the policy, right? And at some point, I think a few of those people probably decide I'm going to stay home because
these people are freaks.
They are freaks. I don't know. I think it's probably a wash. Yes. Go ahead.
Did you see that poster that's going around that's like unite? It says unite, and it's a big picture of Trump. And then there's Elon, there's Tulsi, and there's RFK. And I guess JD Vance is on there.
Yeah.
But let's forget JD Vance for 1 second and think about everybody else in that photo. Do you know what they all have in common?
They were Democrats.
But
they
no.
also all agree on everything. What are we uniting from? Like, you're all a bunch of red-pilled cranks. It's like, yeah, the cranks have all united together. You have a cranky little ship, you know, that you've all gotten in where you can talk about how you don't like the other elites because you're all fucking elites and all rich yourself, but you don't like the other elites that didn't invite you to the right Hamptons party and you're going to complain about it and like make it seem like you're being censored. Like that's it. That's the team they've put together.
Yeah.
Donald Trump, easily the most normal of those people.
Let's rank. Okay. If you had to live on a desert island with one, with somebody from that poster.
100%.
Elon, Tulsi, 100% Trump.
Trump,
RFK, or JD Vance. Who do you live on? 100%
Trump.
No,
how could it be anybody but that?
If we're on a desert island, I'm going with Tulsi. I don't know. I mean,
ooh, getting spicy on Sarah's desert island.
Wow.
I was also thinking
Tulsi.
Being
a desert island with Trump under no circumstances.
Yeah, not a desert island because we don't want to take into account like whether that they could like gather food for you and everything. Like you're at a spa. You're at a resort somewhere, but you're stuck there. It's like a dystopian future.
Still
Tulsi for you. I think Tulsi. The thing that just jumps right out to me is that JD and Elon are last. Like, I think JD might be last. Elon is the only other one that I would consider to be last in that situation.
Yeah,
but I think
absolutely.
JD is last.
Absolutely.
Really, I don't know. For at least Elon, I would be like, I have many questions.
That's true. That's why JD's last for me, I think.
Because I just don't care what JD Vance says about anything. I certainly don't care what Donald Trump says about anything.
Whatever makes sense. Okay. It's another good joke of mine. Just throwing it away there. Because the best jokes, you just sort of throw them away. That makes them funny.
Wait, what was your best joke?
We all missed it.
From the donut shop, I said, you know, whatever makes sense.
I can't watch the donut shop video. I can't watch it. I've turned it off. I've turned it on. I've turned it on 3 or 4 times. I find JD so unappealing in every possible way. I hate his voice. I can't. I suffer through all these podcasts for you people, these MAGA podcasts. I watch Trump rallies. I struggle. Like, JD rallies are the hardest ones because he's uncomfortable in his own skin. It makes me uncomfortable because he's so uncomfortable in his own skin. And it gives me the willies.
He hates himself, and it's hard to watch.
Yes.
No, I don't think he hates himself.
Oh.
Not nearly enough, anyway. This show is also sponsored by Green Chef. Green Chef is the number one meal kit for clean eating, delivering pre-portioned and prepped quality whole foods with limited processed ingredients. Don't let the back-to-school season set back your nutrition, because your children are making demands of you. Green Chef is making it easy to stick to your healthy eating habits with a new, more flexible menu featuring over 35 customizable recipe options every week. New options include doubling your portion of protein or veggies, or swapping to a plant-based protein like organic tofu or tempeh. And are you dairy-free or gluten-free or vegetarian or vegan? Green Chef has got you covered there too. All told, Green Chef has over 80 weekly menu and market options to satisfy every taste bud, and you can take your clean routine further with 2 times the support. Green Chef's healthiest menu ever and access to thousands of top-rated gyms and fitness studios worldwide called ClassPass. For a limited time, new Green Chef subscribers will also receive 50 free credits to use at ClassPass.
Ooh.
That's about a month's worth of membership.
Ooh, and I like ClassPass. I didn't know about this. Did the host get this, or did you just get it? Why didn't I get a ClassPass?
I'm sure you're going to get it too. And did you know the Green Chef is owned by another one of our sponsors, HelloFresh? I did know that, because HelloFresh is great. So you can switch between the two and have a wider array of meal plans to choose from. So we love Green Chef and our family. We like HelloFresh too. Honestly, we have 2 criteria. Can you make enough food for 6 people? Actually, 3 criteria. Can you make enough food for 6 people? Bam. Yes. Is it easy to make because it's all prepped for you? Bam. Yes. And will the kids eat it happily? Bam. Yes. And that's why we are big Green Chef fans in my house. Go to greenchef.com/nextlevelclass for 50% off your first box plus 50 free credits with ClassPass. That's code NEXTLEVELCLASS at greenchef.com/NEXTLEVELCLASS to get 50% off your first box plus 50 free Class Pass credits. Go hit up Green Chef
on that Class
today.
Pass.
All right, so Trump NFTs or H.R. McMaster?
Or Sarah's rant. We all get a rant for the third segment, and my rant is H.R. McMaster. I want to go first.
Go.
Because I have. It's just been building. It's been bubbling. And I didn't have good guests on the Daily Pod for this particular topic the last 2 days. And so I've just been holding it for you guys.
Okay.
He was on Morning Joe yesterday morning, Tuesday morning. Did either of you watch?
I'm sorry.
It is torture. It is 14 minutes of torture. Nothing. Jonathan Lemire does a wonderful job. Richard Haass is also there. I'm not really sure why. But HR.
Council of Foreign Relations.
Yeah. He's kind of got a evil beard kind of thing going on. He's not evil.
Now?
Yeah, but it's like kind of weird. It's like one of these like patchy gray beard. And you just got to go watch it. I don't know. His look is like, he always had a clean look. His look has changed. So he goes on and he won't answer. Like, he won't answer the obvious question, which is like, who should people support? Trump or Kamala? He can't choose. He can't choose. HR can't choose.
How could you possibly?
He doesn't want
like
to be able to choose
for
the people.
Or chocolate brickle.
This is up to the people to make choice for themselves. Who's he going to vote for won't say. It's a secret. I'm not here
for Kamala.
Yeah. I'm not here as a washed-up general to tell you how to vote. You gave this up. You gave this line up when you became a political advisor to Donald Trump, all right? If you wanted to just be a general, you could have been, you could have tried to go to become the general of whatever branch you wanted to, you know, could, like, I would get it. If the you know, head of the army, head of the Navy during Trump said, I don't want to stay involved, you know, whatever. H.R. McMaster was in the Oval Office giving political advice to Donald Trump for a year, and he's out here writing a book about politics. So, sorry, you can't fucking say that I'm a general and I'm above politics once you've decided to enter politics. That doesn't work. Fuck you. No. I should also mention that we've invited H.R. McMaster onto the Bulwark podcast, and he's declined. I wonder why.
Can't imagine why.
Won't say. He won't say who he's voting for. Can't possibly pick. So it's after the Atlantic piece, where which me and Bill did talk a little bit about on Monday, where he's discussing the traits of Epictetus and Seneca and how Trump has some of their qualities but not others. He goes on. When Lemire is pushing him on the Putin thing. Aren't you a little concerned about that? You know, his Putin feel? You mentioned it in the book. And HR says that he sees Trump's handling of Putin as a continuity with the same mistakes that Bush and Obama made on Putin. He's like, I see the same, it's a very similar kind of a straight line where both of these other presidents, you know, misjudged Putin initially and gave him the benefit of the doubt and thought we could work with him, didn't realize that he was a foe. HR does not express why Trump still feels that way 9 years in, and why Putin's actively trying to help him win the election, and why Trump wants Putin to be able to take over Ukraine.
Can I just put in here for a sec?
Yeah, please.
I mean, just as a substantive matter, the problem, right, the mistake of the Bush and Obama years was that they did not realize that Vladimir Putin was a dictator and wanted to be a dictator. The mistake of the Trump years is that he understands that Putin is a dictator and likes him because of it. So not really a continuity, really two totally opposite mistakes.
A discontinuity,
mistakes.
You would say.
Really two opposite mistakes, right, Governor? Yeah?
You would think so. He goes on, Trump is a disruptor. And a lot of things need disrupting. The question in front of
us. The peaceful transition of power.
Yeah. The question, the philosophical question that HR wants everybody to consider is, how do you balance, you know, taking somebody that's a disruptor that is also at times his own worst enemy, who's going to disrupt things poorly, with, against somebody that's not a disruptor and is going to sort of continue some of the institutional morass that has plagued us over the past half century.
Like the peaceful transition of power, which we have been doing over and over and over since the fucking Civil War. Yeah. And is it about time we broke out of that rut?
Yeah, you know, why not? Why not break out of that rut? And like insulting our allies, like just shitting on them. That's just a new thing. We're just trying that out. Like making fun of Angela Merkel, sexist joke. We're just trying out a little new thing here. So that's the question for HR. He can't answer it. He's just here selling a book to present these sort of big think ideas in the spirit of Seneca for us to sort of discuss around the, you know, in a sort of Aristotelian. No. How do you say that?
Aristotelian.
Aristotelian. In an Aristotelian manner, you know, just kind of sit around, raise these issues, think about them, bat them back and forth, talk about the ways that Trump matches the Platonic ideal versus the ways that he doesn't. And you know, who needs to come up with a solution, because it's all about the journey. So that was H.R. McMaster on Morning Joe. I literally almost broke the television. I was contemplating throwing something at the television. It is disappointing that he's too afraid to go on the Bulwark podcast. You get these guys that you think, you know, they've been in war. I would be scared shitless. I'd be pooping my pants in Fallujah, for example. Not interested. Even holding a gun makes me scared. These guys, that doesn't scare them. Minor pushback about their opinions, you know, challenging their opinions, being challenged at all. That is what drives fear into their heart, I guess. Having to make a political choice.
I think he just realizes he's not going to sell any books on the Bulwark podcast. And so why put out the effort? Our audience is not going to say, oh,
maybe.
Shit,
you don't
man,
think
I got to go
people
and
that would be interested in reading the H.R. McMaster book on the Bulwark podcast?
I do not.
Oh, I do. Come on.
Really?
Yeah.
Sure.
I think our
Jim Comey, by the way, shout out to Jim Comey, clear-eyed, endorsed Kamala Harris, no hesitation. That's what we're looking for.
Sarah, Jim Comey. What do you think of this? So, as somebody who has spent a very great deal of time thinking about former Republican officials against Trump,
and a great deal of time on the internet criticizing people in the vein of H.R. McMaster,
where are you on this?
Well, I'm going to use Tim's thing to lead into my thing.
Great.
My own rant. But I will just add on the generals in particular. Tim makes a point that I have made in the past that I think is crucial, which is that Mattis and McMaster and Kelly, they chose political roles. They chose political roles. And so to sort of hide behind the general thing now and to say, well, we shouldn't be political is absurd. The second thing is, to the point that Tim's making about how scared he'd be in Fallujah, what is wild to me about the generals is that these are people who have themselves put their lives on the line for our democracy. They have taken the lives of young men and women and asked them to sacrifice for this democracy in this country. And it frightens me, genuinely frightens me, that then they cannot be clear-eyed about it, what it means to protect the country rhetorically with the power that they have now as people who have been both political and served the country in uniform, to be able to just simply articulate the threat, which brings me to my rant and my thing. Because, you know, I'll be honest. I want to just talk to you guys. If you weren't following, and I understand why you wouldn't be. Understand why you wouldn't be on Twitter following the back and forth. It's very difficult to follow now on X. X does not, the X and Twitter always was never like the best place to have a nuanced debate. Mm. But what gets really hard is when, you know, you try to have a back and forth and like suddenly, and then other people jump in and before you know it, you're all over the place with what you're saying. But I want to, read the quotation that got stuck in my craw in the first place. But before I do, I want to tell you, I'll just admit that while I was in Alaska, I was doing a no political tweeting, like, moratorium. Like, I was trying to take the time.
Was that
nice? I broke it once for, like, Sarah is censored or whatever, that person who was specifically kind of attacking our project and felt the need to respond.
I missed that. I'm sure that Sarah is censored is great. I'm sure, like, all of these influencers are really awesome, are really smart. You know,
it was a very dumb critique. It was like, do you know that they... what was it? She was something about putting our name on the ads. I was like, we do put our name on the ads. Yes, we do tell people who we are. Yeah. We are open about the thing that we're doing. But I had read one of the things that I had sat on and not done anything with is I had read Jonah's response to David French's endorsement of Kamala Harris in the New York Times. So David French endorsed Kamala Harris.
Good on you, David French.
With an excellent... And David, listen, David's reason is different than mine. So David was making an argument about how you sort of have to defeat Trump in order to save conservatism, which is not my stated goal in itself. But I understood David's argument. And Jonah, who I read always, had written a...
That's quite the contrast with the triad.
Okay. First of all right, you're right. Sorry, JVL, just watch your face. I'm sorry with your face. I do not always read
you
had Jonah.
You walked right into that one.
I did. No that was br- I'm sorry. I read
you're
it.
Trying to
I read
be
it
generous.
Sometimes.
You're trying to
I
be
read
generous.
It sometimes. I was. If I have time, I read it. And I was in Alaska and I was sitting around, I was drinking my coffee and I read Jonah's response. And at one point in this debate, I referred to Jonah's response is soul crushing. And I think Jonah took that to mean that I hold him in such regard that the idea that he had said that he was not, that he disappointed me and crushed my soul. It is actually, the soul crushing part was the tedium, the amount of words I had to wade through and the tediousness of the argument and the absurd illogical way that then what I thought was ultimately ridiculous conclusion was arrived at. That was soul crushing. Like, it just sort of sucked my will to live, having to wade through it all. I'm just saying that I was primed for the moment when Steve Hayes tweeted, "Grim moment in our politics. Some conservatives embracing a nutty conspiracy theorist like RFK Jr. and others fluffing a status progressive I think he means like. There's a typo here. It says Kiel. I looked up Kiel to figure out if it was a reference to something. I believe it's just a typo. So I think he means a statist progressive like Kamala Harris. What a mess the modern conservative movement is.
Now, statist. Also, yeah, you know, like, what fluffing is, right, Sarah? Because this is an industry term.
You know, I'll be honest. Now that you're saying it, I do know what it means, even though this entire time, as is per usual for me, I just thought it meant like, you know, like a kind of a lame like puffing
fluffing
up.
Fluffing up a pillow.
No.
Yeah.
That is not what the term fluffing refers to.
Right. Yes. Now that you say it, I'm familiar with what the term is.
Just want to make sure you understand the exact nature of Steve's criticism.
Yeah. So here was the reason I got, and I'll just say, it is not usual, I think, for folks from the Bulwark and folks from the Dispatch to sort of get into it. It's not unheard of.
Me and Steve have had multiple podcasts back and forth.
Sure. I think those were like, hey guys, like we're gonna sit down. Well, nobody's popping off, right? We recognize that there's overlapping audience, lots of people have lots of history. And I'm usually not the one go around popping off.
So I was noteworthy.
However, I was livid. I was at this notion that the problem with conservatism has been boiled down to by Steve that, and frankly, look, some of the MAGA types are now big RFK stands. That's a problem and also a logical extension of the whole party going Trump, right? Is that now, like, then they just get weirder on the continuum and
there's
they go
a cause
over
and
RFK.
Effect issue here.
There is with the RFK thing. Yeah. But that the idea that the grim state or the modern, you know, the problem with the modern conservative movement, that it is us, because it was, just to be clear, he's probably talking about a lot of different people, and it could range from, you know, sort of a Jen Rubin type or some of the sort of, I don't know, Lincoln Project people. But I suspect he doesn't care about them as much as he cares about or like is as close to the people sort of on the Bulwark side of things, right? Because
could have been talking about Jeff Duncan.
He could have delivered
an attack on former Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan of Georgia.
Or Adam.
Sure.
Could have been met Adam.
But I suspect it was more like you guys and Bill.
Sure.
And whatever. Here's the thing. This notion that the problem with the modern conservative movement has anything to do with us doing an analytical assessment, really, of Kamala Harris's and the Democrats' convention, because that's what he's reacting to. It was post-convention, to say, as we did in our analysis up front, that there was much to recommend the way that Democrats handled that for precisely our types of people who have been whether we have been defenestrated from the Republican Party, whether we've walked out, but whatever it is, we have left for what I think are very good reasons and reasons that are not lost on people like Steve and Jonah. And so the fact that we are interested not just in sort of sadly being marched along and just so sad that we must vote for Kamala Harris because Donald Trump is a menace, and we're not constantly sort of self-flagellating over that. We're fluffing. No, we're not. What we are doing, or let me speak for myself, and you guys can tell me whether or not I'm right. What I am doing is expressing enthusiasm at the fact that Kamala Harris seems to want to win this election, that she is doing the work to broaden the coalition, to bring people in so that she can defeat Donald Trump. And what I do not understand. So like this back and forth spawned several additional think pieces and some weird attacks. You know, I was attacked by Eric Erickson, though not by name, although I am just going to throw in that Eric Erickson in his attack, he accused me of or he didn't, again, unnamed, but suggested I was bullying people into supporting Kamala Harris, that it was am I bullying? I think not.
Maybe people need to be bullied, but sure.
Sure. But in the middle of his rant on this, he talked about how could he support Kamala Harris because Kamala Harris has done nothing but climb the ladder of power since the moment she got up off her knees in front of Willie Brown, to put it bluntly to you.
That's also a term of art.
Yeah, I know what that one means. Thanks. I got that one clearly. And I just want
It doesn't mean genuflection.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, that's a different kind of thing.
Sometimes people can throw the term misogyny around, or they can overemphasize the degree to which, you know, people sort of hating women can influence. That, to me, very blatant misogyny in there. And this is on top of Eric Erickson during this rant talking about how he's given Trump money, how, and probably more money than you, listener. And he is excoriating the, another gross term, the leg humpers in the Trump cult, all while expressing the fact that he will, in fact, vote for Trump, that he has donated money to Trump, and that Kamala Harris is a whore. And I think that Eric Erickson, because he doesn't tweet this kind of stuff, he just says it on his radio show. I'm sorry. I think that that is gross and despicable and not any way to talk about anyone in these conversations. But anyway. Anyway, at the center of this debate, I want to say something clearly, because in the spawning of all of these additional pieces, one by Nick Cattagio over at the Dispatch, which isn't a bad piece. I just think he gets it wrong. Our friend Damon Linker wrote a piece, also good. Also think he kind of misses the point, because there's a lot of sort of navel gazing in these around the role of journalism versus activism, and that, and everybody's sort of trying to, they're trying to make our arguments for us, right? They're trying to say, I think Sarah's saying this and Steve is saying this, and they're trying to square a bunch of circles that can't be squared in them. But my issue, just to speak for myself and to say it very clearly, is not a problem with Jonah and Steve or Eric Erickson, who has called Trump an extraterrestrialist and said that he should have been impeached right after January 6th. It is not a problem with them not being out there constantly saying, vote for Kamala, vote for Kamala, vote for Kamala. My problem is precisely with the fact that I think their analysis is incorrect. So Nick Cattagio, who I think listens to this podcast, who seems to think that I'm arguing for them to be activists, is not true. I'm fine. Be journalists. Now, I think it's silly because you guys, the guys over at the Dispatch, just like us, do political analysis all the time and also talk about solutions and those types of things in our roles. The problem is one of analysis. Okay? People who do good analysis are able to do threat assessments. They're able to understand stakes clearly. They are able to look at a situation and understand the gravity of one versus another, right? They can do, they can sort of quantify the seriousness of one versus the other. Like, that's all analysis. It's the job of people who do political analysis. And I think the problem for a lot of the folks on the right who want to do, like, true conservatism is that they've built up muscles over the years. And that muscle is Dems are bad, 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 okay? And so that muscle just like twitches on them all the time, and they need to do that. And it causes their analysis to be warped, where they are unable to see that the threat assessment, right, to do the threat assessment accurately of Donald Trump every day does something that is uniquely disqualifying. Almost every day. The other day it was the bullying of the people at the Arlington Cemetery. Right? Every day there is something uniquely disqualifying that if you lived in a different political reality, a normal one, you would say was disqualifying for Kamala or any normal Democrat or any normal Republican, right? But Donald Trump plays by entirely different rules for these people. And so they can't. So I tried to ask Steve a straightforward question. Who is more dangerous for our allies? Who is more dangerous for America if they have four more years in office? Is it Trump or is it Kamala? Which is more dangerous? He doesn't answer that question. You know why? Because Steve knows the answer to it. And the answer is Donald Trump is obviously more dangerous. This is the point about H.R. McMaster. H.R. McMaster, if you ask him that question, he knows the answer. It's not close. When you do, and this is where the angriest I get, the more clear somebody sees Trump, the more clearly I know they understand Trump, and the less willing they are to engage in the analysis that Trump is like mountains, legions, universes, more unfit than a standard issue we sort of are still like, well, I don't know how much she stands for. Is she more progressive? Is she moving to the center? Whatever. So fine. Maybe we don't know that. Doesn't matter. The level of dangers aren't, they're not even in the same planet, not in the same solar system. And so if you can't do that analysis clearly, then you are bad at analysis. You are bad at doing the threat assessment. You are bad at doing the job you say you do as a political analyst. Because a good political analyst, I'm not asking anybody to go be an activist. I'm asking people to do their jobs as an analyst and do the threat assessment correctly. And tell people which is more dangerous. Because if you see the danger clearly, and then you're unwilling to tell your audience about how clear that danger is and what you do as a result of it, which is hold your nose and vote for a Democrat. You don't want to fluff, fine. But at the very, very minimum, to spend your time attacking us who see the threat clearly and want something done about it, that to me is a poor use of time.
I concur. I only have one disagreement, slight disagreement. Call me a fluffer if you want. Call me a fluffing statist. But I don't think I'll ever be more excited to go in there and fill a bubble than I will be for Kamala Harris. I don't think I ever will be more excited, even for the people that I worked for, that paid me to work for them, because I've never got to vote against somebody that incited a attack on the Capitol and tried to become a dictator before. This will be my first time I get to do that. I'm very excited to do that.
Not your last.
Yeah. call me a fluffer, call me a pervert, whatever you want to call me. I don't know. I'm happy to do that. I don't think it, because your point is correct. It's a close call. They also misjudged the cause. Well, that's the other thing. It's just like the cause, like the if you are bemoaning the conservative movement, if you care about that, like the people who are responsible for that are not the RFK people, or not either of the people that Steve mentioned. It's not the RFK people or the Never Trumpers that are for Kamala. It's Donald Trump and the people that apologized for Donald Trump and excused him and allowed him to
take
over the party.
Which is my first response. That was my first response that I made.
Okay. JVL, do you have anything to add? You wrote a newsletter on that. I noticed that Sarah read it.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
I wrote a newsletter about something entirely different.
You wrote an
entire
newsletter.
I have nothing to say about any of this.
Subtweeting me. And telling me to leave it alone. I love it. You're allowed to get so mad at people. Here's the thing. I will mostly let this stuff go, like, when it's not this part of the campaign. Like, we're at this part where, and this, like, drives me crazy when people try to abdicate on the importance of what they do. They're like, what does it matter? It's like H.R. McMaster. What does it matter what I say? I refuse to respond. To this. And it's like the whole
matters.
Point of what we do, the whole point is that we provide analysis in order to help people understand what's happening in politics and to think about how to make the most informed choices. Are you doing that, H.R. McMaster?
No.
Are you doing that when you refuse to say how bad Trump is, to say he's an existential threat, and then to give no indication about what one ought to do in the face of such a threat? Is that good analysis?
No, Seneca would not agree with you on that, Sarah. Seneca does not believe that they should choices. JVL, I feel like you're all getting off the hook. You did subtweet Sarah in your newsletter.
No,
you did.
I don't,
you did
I
attack. You did attack the one co-host. Attacked another co-host in the newsletter, and you're just not going to acknowledge it.
I don't think that's true.
I read it. I clutched my pearls. I was reading the newsletter, reading it, and I was like, JVL's making some good points. And then the final line was like, and stop wasting your time tweeting about this. Period. I was like, well, shots fired from JVL.
I put in the Slack in all caps. It was like a Trump truth. I was like, why is JVL subtweeting me in the newsletter?
I have nothing to say about any of this.
You're the worst, dude. JVL, what's your rant?
It's not a rant. I was, you know, so I was very hurt by Tim yesterday doing a YouTube show with Sam.
Sarah's
about
mad
Trump
at JVL.
NFTs.
JVL's mad at Tim. I'm not mad at anybody. I'm a lover, not a fighter.
I was, I'm the guy who has covered the Trump NFT beat, has written numerous pieces about it. And instead, you and Sam, the new hotness, went on your show. And I was really pissed about it. And then I'm
it's
more
not
pissed.
My show. We went on our YouTube, the Bulwark YouTube channel.
Then I was
channel.
Even more pissed about it because it was the single best video we've ever published. It was so good.
So good. It was really, really good. And so what I want to talk about is I want to have actually, I think we should be transparent with listeners. We should have a real question about whether or not it is moral to use our resources to purchase 75 NFTs that we can send Tim to the Trump Resort in Jupiter, Florida for a dinner with
the Trump
president,
National Golf Club,
so that he can go up to him and Tim could say with tears in his eyes, sir, and then have his own sir story. I just feel like that would be an amazing
like
piece
if they,
for us.
So here's my
and
answer
all we've
got to
do is buy 75 NFTs.
I thought about this overnight. If we were sure that they weren't scamming, like if it,
sure
was,
they weren't scamming, we're sure they are. The whole thing is
no.
a scam.
If we're sure they're not scamming about the dinner. Like, if certain that everybody that bought the 75 digital NFTs could go to dinner with Trump, and we were certain that Trump was going to be at the dinner, and we were certain that, like, you know, there wasn't, you know, they weren't going to, like, block me because of Secret Service, or that it was, like, Trump comes in on a video from Mar-a-Lago or
That's
something, you know what I mean? Like, that, if we were certain, I would say it is worth It is moral and worth the $7,500 to let me get back up in his grill, because I haven't smelled that stanky ass motherfucker since 2016. But I don't think that I think that because they're grifters, I think it's probably unwise. But, we should take feedback on it.
I would like to hear
people's feedback.
I apologize
if you didn't include you in the video. Sam invited me. I'm hurt. I'm hurt that you're hurt. I don't, you know, I love
the video
you.
Might have been not as good if I was there, frankly. It was so good.
Thank you.
But here's the thing. It isn't really us spending the $7,500 on it, because believe you me, we will be able to turn those things around and sell them at a profit on OpenSea and flip them, because in the universe of MAGA mouth breather marks, these things are, money
buffaloes.
Machine goes brrr. Right,
75
this is the,
Trump buffaloes. I think we could really make some cash on that.
We would not lose money on this. Is what I'm saying. As a business
let's think
decision,
about it. Let's
we would
let's
not
people
lose
should
money.
In the comments.
The problem is that Trump would also profit, right? We would be participating in helping transfer wealth from mouth-breathing MAGA marks to Donald Trump. Because the way these things are set up, every time one of the Trump NFTs changes hands, he gets a taste.
He gets a vig.
So there is vig, and that's. And that is the thing for these things, that so they make $100 on each one when they sell them, but then they make a percentage on each secondary market sale in perpetuity. But maybe we could take our profit and then
donate
that profit
to
if we had to fluff somebody.
Or poor kids. Yeah.
I don't know.
Let's pray on it.
All right, Sarah, do you have strong thoughts
more.
On this?
Sorry, yeah, my rant's not over.
Okay, let's go.
Really?
Let's go.
It's not over?
No.
Good.
How is that possible?
I got another thing.
Don't dissuade her. I want more. Go. Hit me.
Okay. So one of the things I wanted to ask you guys about.
I thought that was a gag.
I'm sorry, you got to start with and another thing.
I thought that was a good show, long show
and
gag.
And another thing. I have another thing I want to say.
I'm getting hungry.
Just sit there, okay? Suck on your lumen and just wait.
I'm not getting hungry. Go ahead.
I know you're
okay.
Not.
So one of the weird things about this debate over like true conservatives, what do true conservatives do in this moment? Is like,
does anybody notice how many, is there a hard count on how many true conservatives there are in the world?
I don't know. You said it was in the, what'd you say? It was in the
low four figures.
Okay. People who are writing in Edmund Burke. That's true. But there is, listen, I do believe, so Cattagio had this point about like, we're not arguing over Trump, we're arguing over persuasion, which is like sort of I thought it was like sort of fair in the sense that I do think that people like Jonah and Steve, who, by the way, I do read and have admired.
Okay,
like
we're going to do another thing. We don't need to also do
Okay. But of course, this is actually the tipping point for people who don't like Trump, but who find themselves incapable of voting for a Democrat. That is a real group of people. That is a real group of persuadable voters. And the ones who tell themselves, but Democrats are worse, are both wrong and a meaningful slice of the electorate. And I think that when people who speak to those people give them permission to believe that, and by permission, I mean they build a permission structure by those people being like, oh, I admire this other person, or I like this writer, I like this thinker. And whether it's Stephen Jonas saying sort of nothing and then Erickson actively, like you can sort of paint a pebble stone like little walkway from I'm anti-Trump, but I'm going to vote for him with a bunch of these thinkers. Like you can take, you can go from Steve and Jonah over to Eric,
Brit
and then
Hume.
You go from Eric to Brit Hume to Rich Lowry, who wrote the most insane piece in the New York Times saying that Trump, a man of character, should
He should attack Kamala on character.
Character. Yeah. No, I know. It was, I was joking on that part. But he should, yes, that Trump from his glass, thinnest of glass houses, should be throwing stones at Kamala Harris's character, and that this is his advice to him on how to win the election.
I wrote about that yesterday. I'm not sure if you read that piece.
I didn't. I was too mad after the other one that I read. But here's the thing about, so... Anyway, so these permission structures, they matter. And they matter to us, whether it's sort of the Wall Street Journal editorial page. Yeah. They all work together to create an intellectual space that serious people take seriously. And so if you don't think that you play a role in that, building that permission structure, because you say all the time how bad Trump is, well, these people also believe Trump is bad. They also believe he's bereft of character. What they need is for people that they respect intellectually to say, and that is why, with the stakes as high as they are, with the threat being what it is, with the level of just the fact that this guy doesn't engage in the peaceful transfer of power, which is, by the way, about as conservative as it gets, guys, yeah, to preserve the peaceful transfer of power. At the highest level, this guy doesn't represent anything conservative. Yeah, you could probably go ahead and vote for the other person. I can totally see why you'd do that. And in fact, I will too. Anyway, but that's not even my point. My point is, with all these real conservatives who feel the need to vote for Trump because of conservatism, I want to ask, on what are they huffing that they think that Donald Trump and this MAGA movement still represents something conservative? So this is the other problem that I have, is like, people want to fight with me over how conservative I am. And like, it's sort of stupid at this point for me. Like, I don't know, I'm probably more pro-choice than a super pro-lifer, but I'm probably more pro-life than a super progressive. Like, I'm probably more, I think we should have immigrants in than your average MAGA Republican, but I'm also probably more, hey, we need real borders than your average progressive. Like, I don't know. Well, you can, I'm an independent now. I don't know who leans center-right. But I will tell you this, having come up in the conservative movement, the Republican Party right now represents so little that is fundamentally conservative. They want to abandon Ukraine, pull us out of NATO, dismantle the post-World War II order that conservatives have been desperately proud of for so long. They want to cozy up to dictators and abandon long-held allies. There is some of Kamala Harris's worst economic ideas are just copies of Donald Trump's very bad economic ideas. Yeah. And so, like, even on the policies, even on the policies stuff at this point, Donald Trump just told you, I don't even know what the hell he's talking about. He's like, we're going to be the best for women's reproductive rights. And everybody on the right, on the conservative side, is like, well, I don't want to be good for reproductive rights. So what is, are you abandoning? You know, like, tell me what the thing is that is so conservative about Donald Trump, what the policies are,
yeah,
that represent, you guys are just like, you're huffing the fumes of Reaganism's long gone ghost. Okay.
Yeah.
There is not enough in the balance sheet to make you say overwhelmingly, well, I have to ignore the moral implications. I have to ignore the civic and democratic obligations and threats because of this policy. And Eric Erickson, in his like stupid rant that he was doing, is just like, because I don't want to pay more taxes. I mean, I guess at least that's honest. Like, you don't want
to. She's only going to raise tax on super rich people. I guess Eric might be super rich now. I don't know how he's doing at this radio show. But I have one more thing then, too, on the first part of that, on the voting thing that drives me insane. The thing that drove me the most sane about the people pushing back on you was Jonah's point about how, about the whatever, the deep thinking about voting and how voting is not a moral question. It does. And it's just like, every time I hear that from a commentator, you know, that is in this space that's sitting it out, that's like, my vote, it doesn't matter, it's HR McMaster, it's Jonah. I'm like, if your name was HR Jones and you were an accountant in Topeka, then I would say great. You know, if your name was like Jonah Smith and you like had a car dealership in Montana, fine. Like, your vote does not have a moral implication or a moral weight. I probably agree with that. But like, you're a fucking paid commentator. You're paid to tell people what you think. The whole point of what you do is to tell people what you think. Tell us what you think. Tell us who you think is better. I don't, if you want to write in, he lives in DC. If you want to write in whoever the hell you want, Peggy Noonan in DC, great. Write in Peggy Noonan. Write in your dog. I don't care who you write in DC. But to your point, like, the persuasion question, you are talking to people, the readers, you have readers and listeners and viewers who live in Atlanta, who are going to actually fucking matter, whose voter are actually going to fucking matter about whether the guy that tried a coup becomes the president again. And so, like, giving your best, highest and best advice as a commentator is like part of the job about commentating. That's the deal. Like, you're not an investigative journalist that like just writes, you know, whatever. Like, you're a commentator. You comment.
A political commentator. It's sort of like the H.R. McMaster thing, where it's like, yeah, but you went into the administration. Yeah.
You're in politics.
And you engaged
now. You're on
in
Morning
politics.
Joe. You're on
and
Morning
so, like,
Joe.
If you write about politics and it is about how people should think about politics, and then you won't say honestly how one ought to think about politics in this, and it's a lot of it is like self-protective. It's like, well, my vote is not a window into my soul. And
great,
I'm like,
fine.
Okay, but it's not like meaningless either. And also, like, the job is to explain to people why, like, how to weigh things, right? How to what weight do we give? You want to say that Kamala Harris has a bad economic policy around, you know, price
housing?
Controls?
Yeah, I've done that. Yeah,
agreed. Well, the $25K for housing is dumb, but the building, new housing
is
good.
I agree.
I like
concur.
That. Yeah, why hasn't anybody been talking about that? It's actually
I'm
going to
talk about it. I'm on
Yimby's
for Harris tonight.
Everyone
should join. If you've been on this podcast for an hour and a half, you should join me on the Yimby's for Harris Zoom this evening. Go to yimbysforharris.com. I'm going to be a guest speaker with Jared Polis and Wes Moore and other people who are less famous than them.
Okay. Well, that's like an actively good policy. I'm going to talk about the fact that I think that's good policy. And I was in a room full of reporters. They asked about Kamala's economic policies, the $25K for the housing and about the tips and the what. And I was like, they're stupid. They're stupid. And they're popular because that's what populist economic policies are. They are things that are often popular with voters, but they are not good actually when you like do the economic analysis around them. I'm happy to talk about that anytime, and you guys can yell at me for it. Oh, last thing.
All
sorry.
Right.
And another thing, but last thing. We just got off a whole news cycle where everyone was mad at us on the left. All the Democrats are mad at us because we were saying Joe Biden should step down. And that, if nothing else, should represent the fact that we are not like in the tank for somebody just cause, right? We weren't just in the tank for Joe Biden. Like, we think Donald Trump is a threat, a serious enough threat that we wanted to figure out who was going to give us the best chance to beat him. And we knew it wasn't going to be Joe Biden. And so that is not fluffing. I continue to be grateful that Kamala Harris seems to want to beat Donald Trump by appealing to the swing voters that she's going to need to do it. That
that's actually a key mark
and that's
for
an
me
analysis.
In Kamala's column
that's
over Steve's. Kamala's trying to beat Trump and Steve isn't. So
yes,
that's like one point for me on the Kamala side of the column.
I have nothing to say about any of that.
Okay.
All right, guys. Good show.
That was kind
incredibly
of short.
Incredibly long show.
Was that long?
Was
I don't
this,
know.
Was this the longest show on record? This is a long show. But, you know, again, this is the first time in a month that we've been together, so it's good. I hope you and I have something to talk about on The Secret Show, Sarah, which is what I'm going to tell
poor
everybody
Sebastian.
What I actually think.
Poor Sebastian picked the wrong day to book a train after work. Yeah, that's tough. The train's Wi-Fi is notably reliable, very reliable. I'm sure this podcast is up late. Just blame those statists at Amtrak, the fucking statists, you know? Hate them.
Guys, we'll catch you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery. Even though severe cases can be rare, respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV, is still the leading cause of hospitalization in babies under one. RSV often begins like a cold or the flu, but can quickly spread to your baby's lungs. Ask your doctor about preventative antibodies for your baby this season, and visit protectagainstrsv.com. The information presented is for general educational purposes only. Please ask your healthcare provider about any questions regarding your health or your baby's health. Even when you're playing music, you're always listening to your baby, especially when RSV is on your mind. Beyfortus, nirsevimab ALIP, is the first and only long-acting preventative antibody that gives babies the RSV antibodies they lack. Beyfortus is a prescription medicine used to help prevent serious lung disease caused by RSV or respiratory syncytial virus in babies under age 1, born during or entering their first RSV season, and children up to 24 months who remain at risk of severe RSV disease through their second RSV season. Your baby shouldn't receive Beyfortus if they have a history of serious allergic reactions to Beyfortus, nirsevimab ALIP, or any of its ingredients. Tell your baby's doctor about any medicines they're taking and all their medical conditions, including bleeding or bruising problems. Serious allergic reactions have happened. Get medical help right away if your child has any of the following signs or symptoms of a serious allergic reaction, such as swelling of the face, mouth, or tongue, difficulty swallowing or breathing, unresponsiveness, bluish color of skin, lips, or under fingernails, muscle weakness, severe rash, hives, or itching. Most common side effects include rash and pain, swelling, or hardness at their injection site. Individual results may vary. Ask your baby's doctor about Beyfortus. Visit Beyfortus.com or call 1-855-BEYFORTUS.